Charlene, thank you. Thanks for heading this meeting up. Big thanks to John Homer, who's still working in the back, my host. I've been talking to him all year, and many thanks to Todd and Debbie Reed for their kindness. I am a long way from home, but you've made me feel really welcome. I'm from South Bend, Indiana, a big small town, a working man's town, and had somebody told me when I was a little boy I'd be getting on airplanes, flying places, and people would give kind introductions like that, I would have thought you were out of your mind. So this has been a wonderful life. There are two things we follow in my hometown: Notre Dame football and Notre Dame spring football. And I, and even though I'm a graduate of a great American university, Indiana, I grew up about a mile from campus, and I live across the street, believe it or not, from the house Newt Rockne built. He only lived there a year. He was killed in a plane crash. You know, it's a big deal where we live, and there will be some of you coming out for the game, and I will bet a dollar this morning you will be treated with a lot of kindness. That's what I've been told over the years, and I've had kind of a front row seat to it. Congratulations. Today is your day. You're off to great places. You're off and away. You have brains in your head and feet in your shoes, and you can steer yourself any direction you choose. You're on your own, and you know what you know, and you are the one who'll decide where to go. Those memorable lines, most of you or some of you already know this, are from a wonderful book written by the great Dr. Seuss. He had this amazing ability to blend the frontiers of childhood and adulthood together. And I read all those books to my girls, to our girls, when they were growing up. I used a word there a minute ago, frontier. And it has different meanings in the United States than it does anywhere else in the world. I don't know if you knew this or not. Overseas, frontier means a border or a limit or a place where a person shouldn't go. But you know, in the United States, the word frontier means possibilities for change, opportunities, open space, and quite possibly the removal of limits. We used to call space the final frontier. There are several frontiers I'll share with you this morning in the few minutes that I'm lucky enough to be here visiting with you. But I'm gonna give you a warning. You're looking at a man that's probably made about every mistake that can be made in the life insurance profession. But it's been a great life. I am not here to sell you books or CDs or tapes, and I'm not here to tell you how easy it is. It isn't. All the easy jobs have already been taken. The reason I am here is if I have a dollar, and if you have a dollar, and we trade dollars, now you have a dollar, and I have a dollar. But you know, if I have an idea, and if you have an idea, and if we trade ideas, now you have two ideas, and I have two ideas. And that's what makes meetings like this, the Grant Taggart Symposium, which I've heard about for a long time, so great. It's called sharing. Many times, especially early in my career, meetings like this were valuable, sometimes invaluable, and occasionally priceless. My friend Jim Pittman from Portland, Oregon said to me once, it takes 10 years to be a 10-year agent. Somebody in here this morning might be fantasizing about quitting that shouldn't. And if that's you, then I'll dedicate my talk to you, just between the two of us. I may not tell you anything new. I may not tell you anything you don't already know. But my hope is I might remind a few of you of some things you may have forgotten. dreams are recession-proof. Being kind to people never goes out of style. And you know, having a positive outlook is an occupational requirement if you choose to build a big life. It's really good to see a number of young faces here. This is not a get-rich-quick business. It is a get-rich business. But it takes a long time. I didn't qualify for the roundtable my first few years in the business. I don't think I would have qualified for an end table. I took a vow of poverty my first few years in the life insurance business. And it's okay. I was single, and I'd had a degree from a great American university in my back pocket and $400 and a used car. And I moved to a city where I didn't know anyone, and plan B was to make plan A work. And I they gave me an exercise called Project 200. And the man that was kind enough to give me my first contract, named Gene Cook, and I owe him a lot. He didn't hire me for what I was, because on paper there wasn't a whole lot there. But I think he hired me for what I could become. But I bumped into him in the hallway. I never called him by his first name. I called him Mr. Cook. I never have called him by his first name, out of respect. And he said, "Hey, how are you doing on Project 200? I said, "Well, I'm 187 short," which I thought was funny, but not all these apparently are going to be funny. Some of these I do just for me. But he laughed, and I said, "But if you let me hang my hat here, I'll do everything you tell me." And do you know what he said? "Deal." And we shook hands on it. This is not brain surgery. This is not rocket science. I have tried really hard to de-skill myself so I know less and less about more and more, and I can concentrate on the really big things in life. There's a huge difference between what's important and what's urgent. And I think, just as a middle-aged man looking back, I'm looking back now, but there's a big difference between the two. A lot of people try and make everything seem urgent. It isn't. But there are a few things that are very important. I sell something, just like you do, that most people didn't plan on buying this morning. And that gives us an amazing amount of time control. I want you to just put that in the back of your mind. It's a good thing. I go out and look for good people who do well that I can have an important relationship with. That's as technical as this gets. I go out and look for good people who do well that I can have an important relationship with. I don't have to be all things to all people, just a few important things to the right people. And I've been lucky enough to build a really beautiful life by sticking to that simple idea and by falling deeply in love with my wife of 29 years. I pinch myself every morning when I walk down the stairs to get the newspapers that are delivered to our front door. 5 good days makes a good week. 4 good weeks makes a good month. And 12 good months makes a great year. I'm 56 years old, but I'm in growth mode. And a lot of good things can happen if I want them to. Charles Dickens was right. It is the best of times. It is the worst of times. You decide. This can be the best year you've ever had if you want it to be. You can have the best fourth quarter you've ever had if you'd like it to happen. It all starts up here. One thing the $1 Million Roundtable did for me If you take a rubber band and pull it apart, it'll snap. But if you do that with your mind and if you do that with your heart, they stay there. I went to New York in my 20s. I was still single. I'd never been in Manhattan before. I know that's hard to believe, some guy from a small town in Indiana. But I went to Manhattan first time. I'm in my 20s. And I discovered something at Radio City Music Hall at my first annual meeting. I saw what I wanted to become. Artist of the spoken word. It was almost as if these people spoke in italics, the way they carried themselves, what they did. And I remember thinking, you know, they must be in a different business than I am because it's so hard for me. It's so tough. Nobody shows up. Nobody wants to buy this stuff. And these people look like they are just going 90 miles an hour all the way up. Be on the lookout for small victories. Rome wasn't built in a day. Be patient. Good things happen to those people that are patient. And to the young people in the room this morning, half the battle's hanging in there. Be very patient. This is hard, 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 high-paying work that's really good for your brain and heart, and you can build a great life and have a wonderful family. But you just kind of need to take it one day at a time. Most people have the attitude of the average of the five people they spend the most time with. Be careful who you pal around with. How would you like to be married to you? How would you like to go home to you? For 10 years, I wrote letters to people that were getting married. It's called Engaged Encounter. You have to go through it. If you want to get married in a certain religion that's very popular in my hometown. And you can guess what that is. But they would call once a month and say, we've got a couple, would you write them a letter? And I would say, it's my honor. And they'd give me their names, and I would always write. Marriage isn't two people looking at each other, it's two people looking in the same direction. If you want to simplify your life, fall deeply in love with your wife or your husband. I'm attracted to people who care, and I know that I'm allergic to people that don't. And I'm at a point in my life, and maybe this is part of growing older. I'm not an old man, but I'm a middle-aged man. When I sit down and visit with people, I trust that little feeling I get if I don't feel like this is somebody I really want to spend time with. And if I don't call them again, they don't care. It's okay. But if I get a positive feeling this is somebody I'd really like to work with, it's easier to hang in there with them. The last few years, the last 10 or 12 years, have been fascinating. Dividend reductions, demutualizations, class action lawsuits, compliance, mergers, acquisitions. Some days it takes almost nerves of steel just to be paranoid. And, you know, there was a man, there was a man named Connie Mack that was in organized baseball for 64 years. And he was quoted toward the end of his life as saying, I've never had a day where I haven't learned something new about this game. And I feel that way about my job, or our job. And I probably shouldn't call it a job because it's too hard and it's too frustrating and it's entirely too rewarding to be a job. It's a calling. It's a magnificent obsession. It's a little like being in a wonderful, beautiful, wild, crazy love affair with a rhinoceros. And that's okay. You know, we're the only ones that really understand this. It's the career itself is perfectly imperfect, but you don't really understand and appreciate it until you can't get out of it. And I would, you know, and it's funny, you can't get out, it's hard to get into and it's really hard to get out of. I have a good friend that had a wonderful career in Ohio, Marv Feldman. He was the son of Ben, and he and I are friends, and he's a past president of the Roundtable, and I was lucky enough to have dinner with him one evening about a year ago, and he said, you can't retire in your own hometown. I said, why did you move to Florida? He said, you can't retire in your own hometown. And you can't. It's a great thing. You know, Salt Lake's a big city if you live there, but it's made up of small neighborhoods. You know most of the people in your neighborhood. It's a beautiful thing. If you're a Quarter Century Club member of the Million Dollar Roundtable, like Frank or like Tom Fowler is, you've had a great life. You've built a beautiful life. And people look to you as a business and community leader, and it's a wonderful feeling. It's a glorious responsibility. The greatest country music singer of all time, in my mind, had a quote up there a minute ago. Mr. Johnny Cash. He wrote a song that he recorded in the early 70s when I was in college, and I remember where I was sitting the first time I heard it because I was doubled over. I thought, this is the best song I have ever heard. It was about an assembly line worker who builds Cadillacs for a living. You remember it. And this man, it dawned on this fellow, if he would borrow some car parts every day and take them home in his lunchbox, that at the end of his career he might have enough pieces to build his own car. And as only Johnny Cash could sing this, the transmission was from a 53, the engine was from a 73, the front end of the car didn't match the rear end of the car. And on the day he retired, this proud, creative man drove the car over to the courthouse and registered it, and the title weighed 60 pounds. And as the song is called One Piece at a Time, if you want to find it. It's easier to find it now. We were on a family vacation to, we took our girls who are now 26 and 23. And you know, when you have empty bedrooms in your house, you do the same thing I do. You walk into them every once in a while and look at them. You wonder, my gosh, where did that time go? But we were on a family vacation, and my beautiful wife took our girls shopping for clothes, and I was poking around, and I found a store that had record albums. This kind of dates the story. And I found Johnny Cash's Greatest Hits, and I found One Piece at a Time on it. But I know exactly what that man's singing about because I build a clientele and a career one piece at a time. I've written life insurance on a garbage man, and I've written life insurance on a Fortune 100 CEO, and I've had over 65 death claims in my career. I had my sixth one this year, this week. I paid my respects Tuesday night at 5 o'clock. At a wake, or what you might know as visitation or calling hours. And I went in and gave a man named Glenn Edquist a big hug. And I said, you've had a great life. And he said, I had a great wife. And we hugged. If you were a mind reader, or if you hired a hypnotist, or if you came into the Marriott, not far from here, to room 263 and shined a light in my eyes last night and said to me, what have you really learned along the way? Here's what I would tell you. There's an 800 number at the bottom of the ledger statements we ask people to sign. And it says if you feel like you've been hoodwinked, maybe you should call a clerk at the home office. You know, if I were king for a day, I would put the phone number of a widow or the phone number of a surviving business partner, and ask those people, was it a good idea to buy life insurance? I go to a lot of meetings. I'm pretty lucky. I go to meetings all the time. I'm out a lot of, I'm out over 100 days a year. I'm in my fourth year doing that. It's an honor. So I go to a lot of meetings, and I hear a lot about sophisticated products, and I hear a lot about sophisticated markets. And I'm going to remind you of something. Living too long or dying too soon is no more sophisticated today than it was 50 years ago. What else have I learned? I've learned cheap is always expensive. And most people aren't rich enough to buy cheap. I've learned most people don't need financial planning What they really need is financial discipline. I've learned with money, you know, it's probably best to accumulate it before you speculate. If you were going to build a home this fall up in this beautiful mountain we're near, which would you build first, the roof or the foundation? I've learned a lot from the Million Dollar Roundtable. I've learned it's not so much what happens to you that's important. It's how you handle it. I've learned truth is more important than facts. And I've learned all of us have something to say, but you know, it can't all be done with words. Sometimes you draw a picture, and sometimes all you have to do is give a hug. I've learned to keep everything as simple as possible, but no simpler. I've learned high finance. You know, if I owe you $100, then I really have a problem. But if I owe you $100 million, then you have a problem. I've learned not everything works for everybody all the time. Be yourself. You would make a terrible someone else. And I noticed something else I've learned. It always seems like good things happen when I call on someone I'm just a little bit afraid of. And that adds a little excitement to it, trying to call on somebody that does really well. I've learned buying life insurance is a long-term proposition. And the fee-for-service people are very short-sighted about this when they concentrate strictly on the purchase. And, you know, I've learned it doesn't cost any money at all to have an idea or a dream. And I'm usually happiest when I have both. And finally, I've learned the sweetest law in human nature. I mentioned this to John last night. In relationships, you'll always get back more than you give, always. You just don't know when. Anybody in here like birds? Anybody a birder? I don't know where that noise came from. But I'll tell you one interesting fun fact about birds. Eagles are the only bird apparently known to modern man that don't flock, except for the third week in June. And they fly in from all over the world. And this past June, they flew into Anaheim, California, 7,200 strong. First, you have to qualify, then you join, and then you go to a meeting, and it's the greatest show on earth. You'll hear speakers at MDRT meetings like Rudy Giuliani and Lee Iacocca and Colin Powell, and in morning sessions, you'll see men, grown men, crying. And in afternoon sessions, you'll see people who make incomes well into seven figures taking notes so fast it'll make your head spin. If you want to learn how to think big and dream big and love big, Tom Wolfe probably said it best, the late Tom Wolfe. It's not a sales organization, it's a way of life. It helped me make the most of myself. And I know I'm a better parent, I know I'm a better son, and I know I'm a better citizen and husband, not for qualifying, but for going to the meetings. Anybody in here in the middle of a midlife crisis? Oh boy, I am. It's not about doing different things. It's about doing things differently. Don't be afraid to shake things up a little bit. You know, what somebody does with their spare time and their spare thoughts and their spare money probably says something about the life that they lead. And I'm not here to preach because you're a great group of fine human beings. But don't be afraid to grow your brain a little bit. You know, when you have a television on, somebody's making $1 million an hour, and you could be reading a book, you could be at the symphony, you could be praying, you could be hugging your wife or husband, you could be raising money for charities, you could be taking a memorable trip, eat good food, laugh out loud, hug people you care about, think great thoughts, write them down, make a joy list, laugh, cry, sing, pray. This isn't a dry run. Everybody carries cell phones now. I wrote an annuity on a man about a month ago. I said, "Tom, what's your cell phone number?" He said, "I don't have one." He's in the construction business, and I looked up at him and I said, "You're your own man." And he smiled at me. But I'm here to tell you, if you love someone and you have your cell phone in your car or in your pocket, tell them. You send text messages to people on stuff that really isn't important. I text our youngest daughter. She's the one I text to, and I text to her all the time. "I'm proud of you and I love you. You're a proud dad," or "I'm cheering for you." Oh, the places you'll go. You can get so confused. You'll start in to race down long wiggled roads at a breaknecking pace and grind on for miles across weirdish wild space, headed, I'm sure, toward a most useless place. Sometimes people run so fast they don't take time to enjoy the day. And sometimes they learn how to manage time, but they don't know how to manage energy. Look for nice things during the day. Look for uplifting moments. Look for small victories. It's called emotional stamina. It'll make you a better person. Any golfers in here? There's more than that. You live in a great place where you could be playing every once in a while. You're looking at a man that's fascinated by the game of golf. And, you know, so many ups and downs mirror some of the struggles we have. Gardner Dickinson, an old pro, he was actually an American. You'd assume he might have been British, but he was an American. He said, "You know, a lot of people like to say golf and life are the same, but I'm here to tell you, golf's a lot more complicated." A lot of times at the beginning of a closing interview, I'll say to someone, "Do you ever watch golf on TV?" And most of the time, most of the people I talk to are middle-aged men, and almost all of them, I already know this, they say, "Oh, I sure do. You know, you bet I do." And I'll say to them, "Have you ever noticed the teamwork between a player and their caddy? A good caddy is not only hard to find, but is worth his or her weight in gold. A lot of players think a caddy's worth one shot aside. Maybe more, but a lot of players will tell you a great caddy's worth one shot aside." And I'll say to people, either in the written word or the spoken word, "I want you to view my relationship with you the same way you would with a top flight caddy if you were going out right now to play one of the most important rounds in your life. Is that okay?" Oh, the places you'll go all alone. Whether you like it a lot, alone will be something you'll be quite a lot. And when you're alone, there's a very good chance you may meet things that scare you right out of your pants. There are some down the road between hither and yon that can scare you so much you won't want to go on. I spoke about that marvelous word a minute ago, frontier. And a few years ago, I entered a new frontier in my life. Holding my wife's hand in the office of a well-respected oncologist the morning I was diagnosed with leukemia. In life, there are no ordinary moments, and this had to be one of the most fascinating in mine. I'm not the first person in this room to be diagnosed with a life-threatening illness, and I know I won't be the last, and I know I'm not the only one this morning. But it's been a fascinating journey, and You know, I was not in contention to threaten Charles Atlas for any modeling assignments, but I had completed 4 marathons, and I work out every day, or I had worked out every day. I still do. I either went to the health club or run about 4 miles a day. And, you know, I'm here to tell you, being a cancer patient isn't who I am, but it sure helped me become the person that I wanted to be, a full-fledged, genuine human being, one that can think and laugh and love and cry, and sometimes all in the same day. This whole thing's been astounding to me, and I have tried to embrace it with the same grit, determination, and sense of humor I learned from so many people at MDRT. Great soldiers are never made during peacetime. So I tried to fully accept and some days even celebrate this situation. My wife and I observed our 23rd anniversary during my third round of chemotherapy, eating grilled cheese sandwiches in the chemo room that she made at home. It was one of the best days of our marriage, and you're looking at a man that's had a lot of great days in his marriage. A doctor or an underwriter or an actuary might tell you that the length of my life has changed, but I'm here to remind you and even myself the depth and the width and the height of my life are still up to me and you. Abundance is a state of mind. And I know yesterday, today, and tomorrow will be very abundant days in my life. I came out here, I'm going to wind this up. I came out here with an old friend. This beautiful, elegant, simple leather pouch was in the scratch and dent room in the basement of a high-end luggage store the first month I started. And I bought it for $40. I've carried it with me on a lot of really lousy Monday mornings. And I've carried it home on a lot of really great Friday nights. It's been at my side when I've heard the word no or the words hell no. You've heard them too, thousands of times. And I'm here to tell you, the briefcase never took any of this personally, even though I did. This simple little bag has carried hundreds of checks for millions of dollars that kept families together and companies in business. It's been with me when I went into the homes and offices of some pretty grateful people who had enough money to pay off a mortgage, put a child through college, buy a prom dress, or pay for a wedding. It helped pay for little things like piano lessons and school uniforms and dentist appointments and birthday presents. This old $40 briefcase provided money so older people could live in dignity, and it helped calm the nerves of people, men and women, that were scared. And you know, it always made sure a widow dressed as well as a wife. I don't honestly know if this briefcase had secret powers. I have daydreamed about that. The luggage store where I bought it went out of business years ago. You might be thinking, well, it probably wasn't the briefcase. Maybe it was me. And I'm here to tell you, it wasn't me. It was the $1 million round table. They made sure I made the most of myself. Abundance is a state of mind. This is a very abundant morning. And inspiration never goes out of style. God bless every single one of you.